Hello, everyone, and good evening, America. Good afternoon, Australia, and welcome to everyone listening to us live on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. This is your host, Tony Lontis, with Tracy Horton, and we are on Radio Tony, and we have been tackling trauma for the last 8 weeks. This is our ninth show in the series, and next week will be our final show. So this week, we are going to talk as we feel we need to talk. I'm going to interview Tracy, but I kind of think that might segue into something else, but just a reminder that you can listen to the post show on YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you can also go to radiotony.com and download the downloadable trauma workbook. It's got lots of things in it and there's resources there. You can also go to tracyhorton.com, connect with Tracy. You can buy her book and you can connect and contact her via her website. So before we go on, just a reminder, we are not psychologists. And if this show triggers any emotions in you, please reach out and seek help. Now, Tracy is an award-winning speaker, author, and qualified life coach. She's worked alongside men and women for over 25 years, helping them rebuild their lives and become the best versions of themselves. Tracy knows real brokenness, and she's managed to build her life from that of an alcoholic, abused, poverty-stricken child to where she is today, a passionate, warm, caring, and amazing woman, and someone I'm so delightfully proud to call my friend. Her experiences have given her insight and wisdom, and that's what we aim to share with you on the show today. She has books, seminars, retreats, and life coaching, and that all helps you deal with the trauma in your life. So, Tracy, you have had a traumatic morning, and I'm wondering if you feel like sharing that with our listeners, because this show is about real life, and often you see us talking to you each and every week with bright, happy smiles, talking about difficult subjects. And I want you to know that we both have very real lives and we have very real things that we need to deal with. And so I'm going to let Tracy describe for you a little bit what her morning has been like, because that leads directly into our show this morning. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Tony. We've had a really big year as a family. You know, we joke in our household, you know, COVID what? Because this year, our family has faced a lot, probably more than any other year. My eldest daughter is in a very precarious relationship, and when I addressed it, I lost all contact with her. My second daughter has some major health issues. And today she ended up staying at my home last night. She was taken out of hospital yesterday afternoon because they said they couldn't do anything further for her, and today she collapsed and unfortunately hit the corner of my big spa bath on the way down, and we ended up in unconscious and in an ambulance again. Now, she's okay. She's in hospital and she's getting the care she needs. But I also have another daughter who, you know, who's still going through a lot of stuff, and then I've got another daughter who's struggling with cervical cancer. So every now and then, as anyone listening who's raised daughters would know, the hormones and the intensity of it all gets a little high. So needless to say, we have some great meditation music going on in the lounge right now while everybody else self-soothes and sorts themselves out. And one condition is there's to be no noise for the next hour. So we're doing okay. Everybody's being looked after. But needless to say, when I finish this show, I'll be back in full mum mode looking after everybody.
Yeah, and I guess that's important to point out to people that just because we do what we do and we help people with trauma and trauma recovery, that doesn't mean that we're not hit with the real impacts of life. And it's important for you to understand that we don't live some sort of charmed existence, but in dealing and healing with our own trauma, we've learnt to take life as it flows. And sometimes it kind of smacks us around a bit. And you can hear by Tracy's mourning exactly what she's had. So my first question today was about what your life looks like now. So outside of the chaos of today, tell the audience what life normally looks like for Tracy. What's your world look like now?
You know, Tony, I often say to people, I haven't had a bad life. I had a rough start because I married a beautiful man who was completely the yin to my yang, the opposite in every single way. And through that, the book I wrote, The Unhappy Smile, was dedicated to him because he has been such a gift to my life and so beautifully kind and relational and loving. Absolutely. And we just have this beautiful life. And he had prostate cancer, but he's cured of that now. I tell you, it's been a big deal for us just recently. And I remember sitting at the beach one morning and him and I saying we were lucky, because if anything was to happen to him, we would have not one regret. And so, you know, Paul and I have made a very conscious decision to live our life and to choose the life we wanted, yes, to make the decisions we've wanted, to live where we've wanted, to raise the kids how we wanted, have the children we wanted, because we both are very, very much about living a life we're in love with. And I do have a beautiful life. I live in Australia, where on the Gold Coast, not far from you, Tony. I have some beautiful friends like you. You know, I'm very, very blessed. I do work extremely hard. I log about 50 hours a week, and about 30 of those are FaceTime with people. So it's a pretty intense business that I do. But other than that, we just have a beautiful life.
Yeah, I agree. There's something about having worked through life difficulties that no matter what you come up against, I still every day at the end of the day am grateful for the life that I live. Mm-hmm. I too work really hard like Tracy. I love what I do. I get to talk to amazing people. I get to help put them on the world map, and for me that is an amazing thing to do. I know I usually Tracy and I talk during the week, but we've both had that sort of week this week. And I haven't had the chance to tell her that the podcast of Radio Tony shows is now sitting in the top 3% of worldwide, right, of podcasts worldwide, which Congrats, is kind of Tony. Exciting, you know.
It is.
Kind of exciting.
Yes.
And so, it's those little things that you go, oh, wow, maybe I am starting to make a difference. Maybe, you know, this life that I love, this thing that I do is going to help a lot of people. And I know that that's Tracy's desire as well, to help as many people as possible in this lifetime that we have. And so life is pretty good, but that's not how it started for Trace. So Tracy was born into an alcoholic family and had a lot of trauma. So I want to talk just briefly, Tracy, about your childhood, what it was like for you and some of those memories that you have from your childhood.
Yeah. Listen, I'm really happy to tell my story because I have healed through it and I'm a big believer in identification. But I would like to tell everyone today that if you identify with the story or it triggers you, please talk to somebody, please seek some help, because it's never my intention to make your day worse by bringing up your trauma. I was born to a couple who, my dad is a schizophrenic and he has 5 dissociative personalities. So I grew up with 6 dads. I grew up with a mum who self-medicated to cope with those 6 dads, because her life was not easy at any moment of any time of the day. We had nothing in our life that we could associate with others as being normal. We never ate at a set time. There was never food in the house. By the time I was 12, I'd been abused by 12 different men. My parents partied every night from as young as I can remember. So by the time I was 12 years of age, I was pretty much radically different, because it was really only the early 70s, so it was radically different to most other kids in my town. I went to a school with 500 kids, and my sister and I were the only 2 that didn't have a father at home, which is pretty incredible now when you look at the stats. So I knew at a really young age my life was different. I knew at a really young age my parents were in trouble, and that trouble was coming to haunt us. Dad was extremely violent. I still have scars. I still have physical scars, physical ailments. The stories are deeply horrific. And I share those only ever face-to-face when I'm on a stage and I can read the crowd, because I never, ever want to have somebody sitting at home really triggered. But I can say this. In Australia, the police say that there is four ways a child can be harmed: sexually, mentally, physically, and neglectfully, which means that their schooling and their food is not up to scratch. I ranked 92% on all four. Yeah. So it was a tough start.
And again, Tracy only discloses and tells this story so that you can see and know that there is hope and healing available to you. And particularly if something we talk about today triggers you, you know that there is hope and help out there. And Tracy is a living example of what you can do if you seek that help. Because at the end of the day, sometimes it's just up to you. No one else can make the changes or start the healing. It has to come from you, and it has to start from you. And sometimes those triggers are your brain saying, okay, time to get some healing, time to start working through the grief associated with your particular trauma. Tracy, you knew from early on that your life was not what you would call normal. And I'm hesitant to use the word normal, because I actually believe that normal is normal for you, not normal as compared to anyone else, because that is part of the problem. If you accept what is normal for you, embrace it and work with it, that helps with dealing and healing with some of the trauma. But back to our Tracy's journey of self-discovery and healing, it probably didn't start for you until your late teens, is that correct?
It actually started for me one day when I was caught drinking at work. My boss caught me drinking at work, and he asked me what I was doing, and I said I was having breakfast. And I thought he'd find that funny, but he didn't, surprisingly enough. I was putting Baileys into my coffee to sober up. And, you know, the truth, Tony, is that when you grow up with something under the age of 12, you have no mechanism to judge it. So you actually become it without realizing it. So I had some signs that I came from a broken home, for sure. I had some signs that my life was traumatic and I was in trauma, for sure. But, you know, we're talking late 70s and people aren't picking up on this. But my boss did. He picked up that I was behaving certain ways at work, and I was still doing the work, but he sent me to a psychologist. I worked for a very large company and they sent me to a psychologist. And I didn't know what a psychologist was at this time. I was 18 years of age, and he asked me a couple of questions, and I told my story. And I can remember sitting there thinking, I can't believe what's coming out of my mouth. Like, I don't know what this guy did, but he opened me up. And I'll never forget, he put his clipboard down and he said to me, I can't help you. He said to me, you're beyond help. He said, you can't live with this. He said, you will have to be medicated, and I presume you will be dead by 30 or unable to contribute to society. And at that time, to be honest with you, I just had this huge vision of this broken woman. And I thought, and in many ways I aligned it to Mum at the time, unfairly, to be honest, but I did. And I thought, you know what, I don't want to be her. So I went outside of his office and I stood on the side of the road thinking, just walk in front of a car, Trace, just do that, just do that. Like, if this is all you've got, just end it. And something inside of me said, give yourself 5 years. And so I began a journey at 18, and at 23, I was going to quietly disappear and take my life if I hadn't found the answers. And in 5 years, I went looking and I studied all the people that had beautiful, happy, healthy homes, and looked at what did they do that I didn't do? What did families that stayed together do? What did children who had normal fathers look like? And strangely enough, I thought I was discovering something everybody else knew. But Tony, as we know, the world is very different today to what it was in the late 70s. And so out of it, out of my discovery and what I applied to my healing, I pretty much have written the book The Unhappy Smiles, because now everybody actually needs to know those principles. Yeah.
Absolutely. In talking about The Unhappy Smile, I wanted to know what prompted you to write it in the first place. Before we start delving into it a little bit more, what was the catalyst that got you to think about writing, and how hard was that for you to sit down and write?
It probably took me 3 years to come to terms with the fact I needed to write it. I knew I needed to write it. I'd had a few people say to me, you need to write it. There was two catalysts. One, I turned 50, and it was a Monday when I turned 50, so they threw me a big party. The family threw me a big party on the Sunday, and then my husband had to go to one of our businesses on the Monday, and I was home alone. And all of a sudden just crept in the fact that my parents, my sister, none of my family were acknowledging a really big deal. And that, you know, I was now 20 years past what that man had said, what that psychologist had said, and I carved out this life. And I just thought, you know what, it's time for me to actually put my story to print and help all the other women that are just having these same emotions today. Mm. But I wrote it two-part. I also wrote it because my first granddaughter was a result of rape. And I haven't actually shared that publicly before because it's not my story, but she's become aware of that this year. And actually the biggest catalyst for me was that one day I knew I'd need to hand her this book, and I knew that she would get a lot out of it knowing that it was her nana who'd written it, and it was her nana who'd come through that.
Yeah. So in the first chapter, you talk about nature versus nurture. What do you mean by that, Tracy?
Okay, so I broke the book down into three different segments. And the first thing I talk about, and it's to do with the Serenity Prayer. So the first three chapters are based on the things we cannot change. Because when we're in trauma, Tony, and when we've come from real brokenness, we tend to first change us to fit in. So loud people become quiet, gentle people become obsolete, you know what I mean? Like, we make whatever changes we need to fit in. And for me, as you know, I am one of the most outgoing, vivacious women you've ever met. I never spoke because I thought the quieter I get, the shyer I am, the more likely I am to avoid any more hurt. So one of the first things I talk about is that Hippocrates in 400 AD discovered that we are born with a type of nature, and it's a combination of two. So the whole of creation, every human ever living has a combination of two of the four predominant personalities. And to this day, Briggs, Meyer, Disc, everybody is based on this thing. And so after studying it, I came up with my own four, which was the driver, the detailer, the dreamer, and the dancer. And I talk about it because I think the important thing to understand is you not only have a nature, then how you're nurtured with that nature makes a difference. And when you put the two together, you can't change that. You have to learn to accept it, live with it, and make the best out of it. And so you shouldn't change it because it is who you are. And sometimes nurture works. So if you, for instance, if you're born with two very strong-willed parents and you're a very soft-natured child that's happy to be led, that family is beautiful. That is their favourite child, and everybody says, how on earth did you raise a child like that? Give us keys. But if that same couple get a strong-willed child who's exactly like them and who can speak their mind, oh, my goodness, are things different.
Yes, definitely. Makes it very hard. So those four personality types, having read the book, I know that they relate to all the other major profiling personalities across the planet. You then go on to talk about in the book having a North Star, and it's a beautiful story, and I want you to tell the audience about who your North Star was and why that person was important.
Yeah, so a lot of work that I do with people around mental health, they often have anxiety and depression, and we know that that is a very slippery slope into suicidal tendencies. So one of the things I found really, really important for people to understand is that we all have a North Star, and it's a concept that we all have a guiding light, a guiding soul that aligns with us and helps us. There's always somebody in your life that can help you. And I promise you, the people that are listening that are shaking their heads going, if only, I promise you there is someone. And it might take some delving into society to find the right coach or the right counsellor. It could be a family member. It could be someone you haven't spoken to for a while, but there's always somebody. For me, I was extremely fortunate that it was my grandmother, my mum's mum, and she was a beautiful soul. And I used to tell her stuff. I can remember as young as seven telling her stuff. And, you know, back in the day, they didn't step in. They didn't have opinions. They, you know, they very much, and she was very English, and my grandfather was full-blooded Tongan. So it was a cross-cultural relationship that I grew up around. And she would always say to me, Tracy, I promise you it will be okay. And I can remember just hearing those words. And even now I think, you know what, Nana, you were right. It was okay. We got through it, you know. But she was always there. We spent all our holidays there. Mum would drop us off from school when school ended for the term and pick us up back when school was starting. And I loved it. Nana would buy us new clothes. She'd cut our hair. She'd get us to a dentist. It was fantastic. But she was truly my North Star. She was the one that pointed me towards a life that could have been different.
And very important in your life as well.
Very.
You talk about in the book, three components for creating a successful life. What are they?
So I always say to people, the only three things you ever need to know is who you are, where you are, and where you want to go. So if you truly know who you are, I implore people to be honest with yourself. It might not be a life that you can be comfortable talking to others about, but when we're honest with ourselves, we can actually be authentic and we move much faster authentically.
And then
look at where you are. You know, don't go talking it up. If you're broke, you're broke. If you're in trauma, you're in trauma. If you're lonely, you're lonely. But that doesn't mean you stay there. It just means that's the authentic truth for now. Then where do you want to go? Well, I want to be a millionaire. I want to be successful. I want to have a family. I want to do this. I want to be free of trauma. I want to teach on trauma, whatever it is. But I always say to people, there's only three keys to a successful life. Know who you are, know where you're at, and know where you're going. It's really simple. And I think, in today's day and age, Tony, we have complicated so much stuff. But to be honest with you, when you're in trauma at the level I was in and in the level of some of the beautiful people listening right now, you need it simple. You just need it real simple because it's hard enough. It's hard enough to actually do it. You just need it simple. And it really is that simple when you break it down.
That question of knowing who you are, when you've been through trauma, that can take some time to figure it out. And to do that, you actually need some quiet time, some journaling time, some thought time out of the hustle and bustle of life to figure it out. But once you figure that out, it kind of starts to be the key for everything. Once you know who you are without any doubt, in your most authentic self, it leads the way to everything else. So starting there, no matter where you are, and working that out is the best point to start. You, further in the book, you start to talk about taking responsibility for your life, which actually relates to what we've just been talking about. So taking responsibility for your life is about knowing who you are. But what does it mean from your perspective, Tracy, about taking responsibility for your life?
Trauma comes unannounced, as you know. You know that we've been saying this for weeks. Trauma comes, it's the uninvited guest, and it never brings a decent present. You know, it just shows up and just bangs on your door, and next minute it's there. And so what that tends to do, Tony, is it tends to make people codependent. Because it takes away some self-esteem and some strength for a minute. But in actual fact, part of the journey of recovering is actually taking responsibility. So for me, I had to take responsibility that I was actually a really jaded person and I was actually really a sarcastic woman and I was actually drinking a little bit much. And I actually had to take responsibility for that. Now, we can argue I was a product of environment and hands down we'd win it. But until I actually understood, you know what, I actually have to take responsibility because nobody's forcing me to do this. My story has led me to it. my pathway was obviously going down this way, but I'm the one deciding if it stays on this path. I'm the one actually making that decision. And I think, you know, for people, when they can get to that, that's the really first point of power for people is, you know what?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have lost both legs in a car accident. Okay, so my child was sexually abused by my partner. Okay, yes. So I have lost all my money. Okay, so my spouse did die and I can't get over it. Okay, so I lost my child. And I don't know how to get up in the morning. That's okay. That's all real. And you gotta get with that. But the fact is, you can still be responsible. Okay. Well, maybe I'll talk to someone. Maybe I will get out of bed. Maybe I will be responsible enough to just get out and have breakfast every day. Maybe I'll be responsible enough to walk the dog on my own again. You know, whatever it is. Because if you don't come back to the point of power, you can't begin to heal. Because without, you know, with, and you have to take responsibility for, okay, right now my life got changed. We can argue about whether I was happy about that for as long as we like. But the point of it is that I now have to be responsible, just like everybody else has to. All healthy people are naturally responsible.
Yeah. It's not always easy when you've been in trauma or working through your trauma. And so sometimes you actually have to break it down to the responsibility to small chunks, and that might just mean I'm going to get out of bed this morning. In taking responsibility for your life, it doesn't mean you have to change everything absolutely immediately. If you've been through trauma, then it's much better to chunk it down to small things that are achievable, because as you do those small things, they start to add up and you start to see some change happening. But it starts with the small things. It starts with that decision, doesn't it? I'm going to take responsibility. That's a decision. And then you attach some action. And again, it doesn't have to be big, scary action. It can be little, manageable, achievable action, and off you go, and that's where it starts. Next thing in the book that I was interested in delving into was the concept of safe self-expression. So, Tracy, you talk about it in the book, and I wanted to talk to you, get the audience to understand what you mean when you talk about safe self-expression.
So when you've been through trauma, especially if it's been inflicted by other people, which most trauma is, and in my case it was abuse. So I was obviously still in relationship with some of the people involved, obviously not my dad, but other people. And so for me, learning to actually feel safe enough to express myself again, because in most trauma, we mask, we turn into false self. So true self, false self, we understand that. We don't have time today to delve into that. That's a whole show on its own. But in trauma, we often go into false self, and we often go into protection mode. And part of coming out of that is learning where to sit safely with your self-expression. No, I don't want to eat anymore, thanks. No, I don't want to go there, thanks. No, I don't want to attend that party. No, I'm not up to that today. You know what? I won't be there. It's okay. You can all go. I found there was a lot of, because our Polynesian culture is you shut up and you put up and you do not get to say that if things are bad, and you don't get to pull away from the family ever. But for me, I did. Yeah. I did, because I really had to. And I had to because there were people there that I could not be around. And I didn't need everybody to judge them or to deal with them, because there was no avenue for that in the early, late 70s. But for me, I needed to make a stand. And so learning to have that safe self-expression, do you know what? I'm not up to that today. Do you know what? It's not what I want to do. And that's actually really liberating for somebody who's conformed and gone down under trauma in such a way that they just shut up now to put up with the piece. Safe self-expression is really important.
And that must have been hard for you too, Tracy, because knowing that the importance of family and family gathering for those of Polynesian descent, that must have been pretty tough to learn how to do that and say, well, no, I'm not I'm not going to go. I'm not. And you didn't feel that you had to explain yourself. It was just, no, I'm not up to going. No, I'm not going to be there. Though that was how it started for you, was it, Tracy?
Yeah, so I had very, I'm quite a strong-willed person, and so I became quite dictatorial about it, purely and simply because my self-esteem wasn't up to arguing. I actually didn't believe in myself enough that should anybody have given me a comebackance, I probably would have caved. So when I realised, you know what, I have to pull away, it was like, I'm gone. I'm just done. I'm not talking to any of you for 6 months. And I didn't even give them any room for it because I knew that I needed to heal my self-esteem. I needed to find myself, believe in myself and come good. Now, some people won't need to do that. Some people won't.
Yeah.
But I think for those that do, it's really important. And you know what, Tony? The soft-natured ones just go traveling. The soft-natured people just move geographically. And I probably would have moved geographically if I could have, but I couldn't. And so I just made a really harsh statement one day to everybody. Listen, guys, I just don't want nothing to do with you for 6 months, and then just walked out. And I think they were all in shock, very hurt. But I couldn't have had that repartee with them because I would have caved.
No.
Because my self-esteem was still so low. Now I could, I can discuss it, and now I'm back in relationship with many of my cousins and other people. But yeah, back at the day, I just had to make that really strong decision.
Did they come back to you, Tracy, or did they actually respect you in that moment?
Oh, nobody respected me, Tony. None of them.
No,
I think, you know, in a family where there's trauma.
Yeah.
For those listening, can I just tell you, you're not the only one. You're never the only one because it's a pattern. It's a pattern of behaviour. You know, if we're talking about logistical relationship trauma, if you're having trouble with a husband who's been married before, his ex-wife will have something you can talk to her about. It's the way it is. And, for, you know, for me, we came from a big extended family, you know. Of course, I wasn't the only one. So there was people living in fear of talking about it. To this day, I have a cousin, you know, who can't talk about it. You know, there's issues going on. There's, you know, questions about parentage and all sorts of stuff that's sort of in there.
Yes.
But what I did find was I found my book coming out was really an opportunity because it had taken me a while, like the decision to... Yes. To cut most of them off was sort of like 5 years before the book. And the book actually healed some relationships. It brought some back for, I remember one of my nieces saying to me, so maybe Mum wasn't lying. And I said, what do you mean?
Yes.
They said, when Mum gets drunk, she tells stories like yours, only Tracy, and we thought they were a lie.
Uh-huh.
And I just,
So
that, you know, and I said, and she's not lying. I said, she's definitely not lying. Yeah. So it's been nice to have that sort of healing in it. But I think, I just think, you know, if I could say anything, Tony, when you're hit with deep trauma, you actually have to get a little self-focused and selfish for a little while and let the cards fall where they may, let the universe bring back what was always yours, let things settle and let the dust go wherever it does, but you have to knuckle down because you can't get free of trauma, you can't get healthy and whole if you don't say,
unless
this
you give
actually
you some
about
distance.
Me for a moment. This is about, and what I said to myself is, this is about me because I don't want to be her. I don't want to be that story. So what do? And I realized what I had to do was actually pull out of the party going on in my family that was going to send me that way.
When you talk about the healthy assertiveness that you learnt developed, you then in the book talk about some signs of what healthy assertiveness looks like, and I just thought it would be a good idea today to share with the audience those signs of healthy assertiveness so they can see the difference between non-healthy assertiveness and the healthy stuff, the stuff that you need to allow yourself to do that healing.
Yeah. So I used the word assertiveness on purpose because we see it as such a strong word and we often see it in the negative. But the signs, there's a lot of signs in the book that I talk about, but the top four to me are being able to say yes and no appropriately And if you're in a traumatic or relationship that's harmful, you cannot say your own yes and no. You know, I would be saying yes and screaming no, or saying no and in my head I'm screaming yes. And so as I began to heal, learning how to say that, and again, I married a man who respected that, which I think actually really helped me heal, because he'd say to me, sure you want to say yes? You sure you want to say no? Are you sure that's how you're feeling? And I'd be like, oh, wow, no one's ever asked me that before in my life. Yeah. The other thing is, you know, when you can stop people-pleasing. And for my nature, because I'm a true dancer, I'm a sanguine, I'm a outgoing little butterfly, I naturally want to please people. I love having people happy. And if people are happy, I'm happy. Yeah. But, you know, trying and I think, you know, if I can just be really honest for a moment, when you're people-pleasing around your parents because everything within you is screaming to get away from them, but you can't out of culture, out of belief, and you're people-pleasing them, that is a dark moment. It's a really dark moment.
Absolutely.
And if you do not focus for that moment on your yes and no's and the honesty about your feelings, which is another sign of self-assertiveness, being honest about your feelings, I had to come to terms with the fact that I could not be in the presence of my own parents without wanting to vomit. And that was culturally so negative for me. It was culturally, what the hell is wrong with you, Tracy? You know, come on, you can still be honouring. You know, it's not like your mum touched you, you know what I mean? Like there's all this stuff going on. But to be honest with you, when you hear that in your mind, that's when you just have to say, you know what, I can't, mum, if this hurts you, I could not be sorrier, but I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah. I know. I can absolutely agree with the conversation around parents, because it's just so difficult. Both Tracy and I grew up in that generation where love, honour and respect your parents no matter what was what we were taught and told from a very young age. And so for us, the idea of not associating with your parents, the idea of not participating in family gatherings, the idea of not going to family Christmases were used to, as Tracy said, it made me sick in the stomach. I thought that I was the worst daughter in the universe because I just didn't want to do it. It took many years for me to do what Tracy achieved in just separating herself from her parents. And I have to tell you that you can't do this work when you're still forcing yourself into an environment that causes you such angst. You need to take yourself out of that environment, out of that association, do the healing and the work required, and then slowly come back in. And that's okay, isn't it, Tracy? It's okay to help yourself heal and deal with trauma, and you have to do it. If those people that you are that are called your family and you're just doing it out of some sense of duty that is making you physically ill, don't do it. Just don't do it. And yes, that will be hurtful, but that's only in the short term. The longer term, you will heal. They will heal, hopefully. Perhaps your moving away from them will be the catalyst that causes them to do some healing. But you can't do the work that you need to do with that negative presence or essence hanging over your life, can you, Tracy?
No, definitely not. And you've got to call it. You've got to call it. Yes. Maybe for a time, maybe the universe has a whole constructive program around restoration, but whatever it is, because you're part of the problem as long as you're not well. So until you heal yourself, you can't be part of the solution anyway. And then the solution is left up to the universe. It's left up to God and the universe. Yeah. It's not ours to decide. And I wish it was. I wish it was, Tony, in all honesty, but it's not.
It's not. No. Tracy, in the last part of the book, you have a wonderful conversation about grief. And I bring this into the topic today because a lot of healing from trauma involves moving through the stages of grief. So there is a grief that you have to move through when you're dealing with trauma. There's a grief associated with what happened to you. You know, you have to grieve that little girl that had her innocence taken away. You have to grieve the loss of a father relationship that was never normal. You have to grieve the loss of innocence. So I just wanted today to share about your thoughts around grief and the process of grief and how it fits into overall healing from trauma.
You know, I really think grief is a hidden emotion sometimes for us, because as a society, we don't really understand the timing of grief. We don't understand how long it can take. And so in my book, I talk about complicated grief or residual grief. And because here's the fact, if I ring you today and tell you that I've lost my daughter, you would be grieving with me. And we would grieve for a year for sure, because we're very close friends. But after that year, it's like your life, everybody's life has to go on, and eventually, but I could grieve that for 20 years. And and it's interesting, because I say to people, it's when you have those sad moments connected to good memories that you have to ask yourself if there's some residual grief. Paul's father has always been a beautiful man, and Paul has two sisters. And one Christmas, he made a huge sale just before Christmas and got an incredible bonus. And he went out shopping and he bought a necklace for his eldest daughter, his second daughter and myself. And then he bought his wife one with all three colours intertwined. There was rose gold, white gold and silk and real gold. And then bought Paul a pen. And so on Christmas Day at their house, we get present. They got presented with these gifts from Dad. Dad's never done it before and he's never done it again. And he handed me a box. And at that moment, I was completely undone. And I had to go to the bathroom. And I went to the bathroom and I'm holding this necklace, realizing that I had a gift from a father. I had a father had it intended to go and purchase a gift. I've never had a gift in my life from my own dad. And I slid down the bathroom wall and just cried on the floor, thinking I didn't know what to do with this. I didn't know whether to reject this because it wasn't from Dad, because I didn't deserve it, or whether to let it heal me. And at that moment, I realized I had residual grief, and I had residual grief around my relationship with Dad, and I knew I had to deal with it. And so I say to people, when you have moments that are out of whack like that, where your emotions are deeply out of whack, what you will find is your body is bringing up grief that it needs to let go of. And I remember I couldn't talk to Dad about that day for Paul's dad for months, because I would be reduced to tears. But I remember it healed me, because I allowed it to be what it was. And fortunately, I had a small baby at the time. My third daughter was only 5 weeks old, and so I kind of breastfed her through half of the lunch and sort of easily, because I was sitting in the kitchen, in the bathroom, saying, stop this, Tracy, you're going to ruin everyone's Christmas. You know, put your mother-in-law's going to, such a softie, she's going to be heartbroken for you. Stop it. It's not about you. Stop it. Stop it. Put the damn necklace on. What's wrong with you? But there's just this emotion was just flooding out of me. Because here I was at 28 years of age and I'd never had a gift from my own father, and now my father-in-law gives this gift so openly and honestly. And then his wife, my mother-in-law, has got a chain with me intertwined to the other girls. It was all too much. And they would never have known, and they didn't know till I told that story about 5 years ago. And Dad said to me, oh, Trace, I never knew. And I said, I know, Dad. In fact, I told it at the book launch and I honoured him, you know. But yeah, that's what I say. I say, when you see those signs, just be really aware of them and just let them come out. And if you need help, get help, but just work through it.
And they usually hit you at unexpected times as well. And just as the more you heal, the more things come up and the more things you deal with, and it's a very ongoing process. Trace, before we run out of time, I was going to quickly talk about forgiveness and love. So I want to quickly talk about why forgiveness is so important and why it's so hard.
Okay, so forgiveness is important because it's the gift you give yourself. You're not releasing anybody else, you're releasing you. I came to visit my sister one day. She lived on site where she worked, and one of the men that had abused me had started work there, and he saw me and he came up to talk to me like he'd known me all my life, which he did, but like nothing had happened. And I put my hand out and I said, "Don't you dare, don't you dare." And I went inside and I had this revelation, Tony, that you know how you have these moments where like something clicks. I thought, you know what? That man was going to greet me like a friend. That man has not spent one day feeling sorry for what he did. That guy hasn't missed a beat in his life. I've been mucked up. I've been screwed up. Yes. I've been feeling nasty. And I thought, what am I doing? So the reason forgiveness is hard is because it's like letting them off. It's like saying, you know what, you're going to be let off. But in actual fact, I always say to people, it's the gift you give yourself. Because what forgiveness does is it enables you to say, you know what, I forgive you. I forgive you for what you did. And I get that some people listening right now are getting angry and others are crying because I know how hard this is.
I know how hard this is.
And do not take for granted when a woman who's forgiven 12 different men says it's hard, don't take for granted she doesn't know. She knows.
You do.
But let me tell you, it is the gift you give yourself because it's the only time you can love yourself, pick up the pen and rewrite your own story. If you do not forgive, those people are writing and orchestrating and narrating your story and they don't deserve it.
They've still got space in your life.
It's enough they bought the trauma. They don't deserve to finish the narration. Do not give them that. Do not give them that. Forgive them for yourself. And forgiveness is a very easy process. It's just a case of energetically releasing them, forgiving them. You don't have to tell them you understand because what's to understand? You don't have to tell them that it makes sense because it doesn't, right?
Doesn't.
And for people, sometimes people listening to this, you know, when you've lost a loved one, you have to actually forgive God. You have to forgive something intangible, whatever your belief around God is. But at the same time, whatever it is, the universe, crystals, the dog next door, your dad, God, whatever, what you have to do is you have to release them and say, I do not understand this. I do not know why this happened. Yeah. But all I know is that I forgive you. I release all the negative energy that this brought to my life because from tomorrow I'm writing my own story. And, you know, I met a woman just recently, Tony, and her daughter was the first girl in Australia that was poached online and killed. She met the guy online. He'd lied about his age. And that mother, the strength of that mother and what she's done with that child's memory, I thought to myself, my goodness, every woman needs to meet her. Every woman needs to hear her story because she was just so beautiful. And I thought, how lovely for all of us, because she spoke at a really big event, I said, how lovely for all of us that she got out of bed one day and said, I'm going to forgive you because my daughter's memory is more important. And I made a decision to forgive them because they weren't even worried about me. And I decided I wasn't ending up their story. At 30, unable to contribute to society was their story, not mine. Wasn't mine. I wasn't doing it.
And that's why forgiveness is so powerful. Again, if you're struggling with any of these issues and struggling with anything that you're hearing today, please reach out and talk to someone. There are lots and lots of people around that can help you with elements of forgiveness, healthy assertiveness, healthy self-expression, etc., etc. I've saved the last topic of today's show is love. Let's talk about love. What does real love look like in your life, Tracy?
You know, learning that love had boundaries, learning that love was honesty, that it was integrity, that it was trust, all that stuff. You know, when you're a young girl and a man tells you he loves you, that twists that word very, very quickly. But learning what true love is, and I have to say, again, Tony, my husband has taught me this consistently for 34 years, having given birth to four children and now 9 grandchildren, I get what love is. But in the book, I talk about bold love, and that is that is what normal people do and people in trauma think they have no right to, and it's simply this. You and I go out to dinner and we're chatting away and I say something and you disagree. That's bold love. You love me enough. And here's the thing. If you and I fall into a disagreement, loving me enough to challenge me says you want to stay in relationship with me. Walking away and saying to your husband, Shane, I'm never having dinner with her again. She's just lost it. That's not loving our relationship. That's not honouring me. But when you sit at the table and you say, listen, we got to talk about this, Tracy, because you and I disagree on this and it's actually a bit of a big deal for me. That's like, okay, Tracy, here's an invitation. Do you want to stay in my life? Do you want to still be important? And, you know, Tony, I wrote this book because it's a small book. It's a simple book. It's big print. It's one book you can pick up and you can put down, you can pick up and you can put down. And Tony Lontis, you know, you are a big, big part of my life. So today, for all of your listeners, anyone in the States that wants to purchase the book, I will get it to them by Christmas, no postage at all. And anyone in Australia can have it at half price. So as long as they put in the comments Radio Tony, they will get this book sent to them at half price for Christmas. And in that book, everything I talk about, they will see. And I promise them.
Absolutely.
And my guttural promise is that if that book does not change your life, I'll refund every cent. But also, every time somebody purchases one, another one will go into the hands of somebody who needs
someone
it this year.
Who needs it.
And a DV support group here in Australia. Or if somebody in America wants to reach out to you, Tony, and can give us some names over there, we can send them there. There's no problem.
Absolutely. If you either jump onto radiotony.com and use the contact form and send us a message, or tracyhorton.com, and Tracy, that's if you want the books directly from Tracy, tracyhorton.com, you'll find the Unhappy Smile on her website. Yep. If you send either of us a message, an email, Tracy's contact details, my contact details are on radiotony.com. Reach out, tell us what you need, and we will make sure that that gets to you.
Yep.
So we are just about out of time again. It's been a wonderful conversation around trauma, healing, and everything in between. I know that I want to get you off the show on time today because your family needs you back.
I appreciate it, Tony. I appreciate it. But I'm having a lovely time too.
Oh, look, obviously, Tracy and I are very close and we share a lot both personally and professionally, but our biggest desire is to help as many people as possible across the world to live their best life. And for many of you, that means healing your trauma. So jump on either of our websites, radiotony.com, tracyhorton.com, and you will connect with either of us. Either of us will be able to organise getting books to you for our American listeners. We will get them to you for our Australian listeners. Absolutely. Just jump onto either website and let us know that you need them. We're here to help. And that, my wonderful friends, is our show for this week. Tracy, thank you so much for joining me again on Radio Tony, Tackling Trauma with Tracy and Tony. We go into our last in the series next week. We'll join you live for one more show of Tackling Trauma in the lead up to Christmas. I look forward to you joining us all for our final show next week. Tracy, thank you so much. And over to you, TJ.